Okay, good morning, everyone. So I figured being that today is Tu B'Shvat, we'll spend a little bit of time focusing ourselves this morning, on Tu B'Shvat. I feel it's not such a terrible departure from Parak Shira, as Parak Shira speaks about the natural world, Tu B'Shvat, as we'll see, is a celebration of the natural world as well. But our goal this morning will to try to be a little bit, glean a little bit of a deeper understanding, a deeper appreciation. Because remember, when we think about Tu B'Shvat, what comes to mind? Trees. Good. What else? Fruit. Specifically? Right, Shivas. I mean, and beautiful. No one here ever got like the little pekalach in school on Tu B'Shvat with the buxer and halba. No? I'm sorry. All right. Some of you lost now from your childhood. So some of my earliest childhood memories are this little brown bag filled with items that are supposedly fruit. They're supposed to be fruit. They're identified as fruit, but yet you're not sure if they're edible, not edible. And the truth is, especially in Chutz La'aretz, you see in Eretz Yisrael, in Tu B'Shvat, so you know as the song goes, which I won't sing for you, but the Shkedia Porachat is not just a nice term, but truth is the beautiful thing in Eretz Yisrael is you literally see, over the course of one day, things so beautifully, dramatically begin to change. Nature comes alive. In Chutz La'aretz, it's sometimes a bit more difficult. There's not all that much difference between the 14th of Shvat, the 15th of Shvat, and the 16th of Shvat. So, but obviously, this day has incredible significance and incredible meaning, and that's what we're going to try to delve into today. So just to show you how we know that Tu B'Shvat is a day with meaning, if you take a look at number one, so the Shulchan Aruch writes, Nagu Shlalipo Al Pneim B'Tu B'Shvat. So the minhag is that we do not recite Tachanun on Tu B'Shvat. Now, why is this an important concept, that we don't recite Tachanun on Tu B'Shvat? Why is this important? I'm sorry? Excellent. Remember again, What's Tachanun? What is Tachanun? Right? So Tachanun, remember, is not just simply a tefillah, but Tachanun is a supplicatory prayer. Vayomer David al God, sarli ma'ot. Tachanun ultimately, again, is a form of tefillah that speaks about tzara, that speaks about difficulty, that speaks about challenge, that speaks about adversity, that speaks about the fact that life is difficult and overwhelming, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu always comes through. So any time that you have a day that has an element of joy associated with it, any time that you have a day where ultimately there's simcha, we automatically omit Tachanun. This is very important. Therefore, by definition, if the Shulchan Aruch is telling me that we do not recite Tachanun on Tu B'Shvat, then what does that tell me about this day? That there's an element of Simcha, there's an element of Yom Tov, which at first glance is exceptionally strange. Because as we know, the Mishnah Berurah tells us, so take a look at number two. The Mishnah Berurah says, so what's unique about Tu B'Shvat? Shehu Rosh Hashanah Le'ilanos. For this is the new year for trees. Venoagim ha'ashkenazim laharbos az b'minei peros shel ilanos. And Ashkenazim have the custom to eat a lot of fruit. Okay, so very interesting. There doesn't seem to me anything so dramatically simchadik about this day. So let's analyze it for just a moment. So we know Tu B'Shvat is important from a halachic perspective. If you take a look at number three, so this is the first Mishnah in Meseches Rosh Hashanah. And the Mishnah begins with the statement, Arba Rosh Hashanim Heim. There are four New Years. There are four New Years, and the Mishnah goes on to list the different New Years. Of course, the New Year, when we think about Rosh Hashanah, we think about the first of Tishrei, which the Mishnah identifies ultimately again as the Rosh Hashanah L'Shanim. Right? That was ultimately, again, Rosh Hashanah on Tishrei, the first of Tishrei, is the calendrical New Year. The New Year, the beginning of the tracking of time, of course, we associate a different and profound meaning with that Rosh Hashanah. First of Tishrei, not just simply the beginning of calendrical year, but ultimately, again, the Rosh Hashanah for judgment as well. But if you look at the end of number three, the bolded part, Be'echad B'Shvat Rosh Hashanah Le'ilon K'divrei Beis Shammai. On the first of Shvat is the Rosh Hashanah for trees, in accordance with the opinion of Beis Shammai, Beis Sila says, no, B'chamisha Asar Bo. That the Rosh Hashanah Le'ilanos, the new year for trees, ultimately, again, it's a machlokis. Beis Shammai says the first of Shvat, Beis Hillel says the 15th of Shvat. And the Gemara explains that we paskin like Beis Hillel. So Tu B'Shvat, the 15th of Shvat, is the Rosh Hashanah Le'ilanos, the new year of trees, the new year for trees. What's your obvious question? right? Why do we need a new year for trees, right? I understand why I need a new year for calendars, as the rest of the Rosh Hashanah, as the rest of the new years go in the Mishnah. I understand ultimately, again, there's a new year for kings by which they mark their reigns. There's a new year for Ma'aser Behem, which we'll discuss. But why do the trees require a new year? So it comes along the Bar Tanura in number 4 and says something quite beautiful. Rosh Hashanah Le'ilon, Le'inyon Ma'aser Peros. So the truth is, the new year for trees has to do with Ma'aser Peros. We know, again, that there are a number of different Ma'aser, a number of different tithes that one is obligated, a farmer is obligated to separate from his produce, whether that be produce that grows on the ground or produce that grows from the trees. There is an obligation, ultimately, again, to separate out Ma'aser. Who do Ma'aser go to? So they go to a variety of people, depending on the year in the Shemitah cycle. Remember again, each year of the Shemitah cycle brings with it different Maaser obligations. So there could be Maaser that goes, there are Trumos that go to the Kohanim. There could be Maaser that goes to the Levi, Maaser that goes to the Ani, to the poor. Depending on the year, different types of Maasers that get out. So the interesting thing, the Bar Tanura explains, She'im ma'asin peros ilon shechantu kodem shvat, al shechantu la'achar shvat. So there's an interesting halacha that says that when taking ma'aser, you only tithe from that year's produce. In other words, we don't tithe from one year to the next. So for example, so meaning you don't tithe 5780 produce from 5779 produce. The produce becomes its own unique individual cohort, bless you, and all trumas and maestros are separated from that particular cohort. Now, in order to have a cohort, what do you need? What do you need? You need a beginning and an end, right? How do you know what a cohort is? How do you know what a grouping is? So there has to be a particular crop year. So what's the crop year for ilanos, for trees? Tu b'shvat. So for example, again, in this year, we'll call it, so any fruit that grow between, we'll call it Tu B'Shvat 5780 and Tu B'Shvat 5781 will be part of one cohort. So in tithing your produce, when the farmer tithes his fruits from the tree, he's going to assess his Ma'aser obligations from the fruit that blossoms or that buds between this year Tu B'Shvat and next year Tu B'Shvat. You can't tithe this year's produce from last year's produce from this year's produce. Every cohort is reckoned separately and independently. The beginning of the year for Ilanos, remember again, this is very interesting. Well, maybe it's not so interesting. But remember, different agricultural things have different cycles. So for example, items that grow from the ground, what's the halacha? What's quote unquote like the new year for wheat? When? Pesach, excellent. Which specifically when? Which is brought when? Second day Pesach, right? Technically, what's the first day Chalamayit, right? Second day Pesach. So you see again, interestingly enough, different parts of agriculture or different agricultural items have different New Years. This is the same idea, by the way, of Chadash versus Yashan. What makes something Chadash versus Yashan? The past year, exactly. So meaning, again, up until right now, so produce might be considered chadash until the second day of Pesach comes around, and then everything that is chadash is yashan, and the New Year's crop becomes chadash. So every part of the agricultural cycle has these what we call agricultural cohorts, agricultural groupings, which tell us ultimately, again, how to tithe these items. So therefore, when it comes to fruit trees, the New Year for tithing purposes on fruit trees is Tu B'Shvat. Tu B'Shvat. Good. Very beautiful. So what's intriguing about this? So now you've learned everything there is in halachically about Tu B'Shvat. So what's your question? So why is this such a big deal for us? Or to say it a little bit differently, so what's the Yom Tov aspect? So at the end of the day, what's the Yom Tov? Meaning I understand the significance of it, and I understand the importance of it in an agricultural society. Tu B'Shvat was pivotally important because ultimately at the end of the day, it goes ahead and it creates the end of the previous cohort and the beginning of the new cohort. But at the end of the day, what makes, remember again, this is why Dafke used the Shulchan Aruch as the springboard for our discussion. The fact that there is no Tachanun on this day tells us what? that there's an element of simcha, that there's an element of a yom tov like identity to this day. I understand the halachic importance of it. I understand the agricultural importance of it. But in no way do I see any type of simcha or any type of yom tov element to it. So let's go on a little bit. Take a look at number five. So the Gemara in Meseches Rosh Hashanah says as follows. So the Gemara is intrigued. Leaving aside the machlokes b'sham b'sil for now, let's leave that aside because we dealt with that. B'sham says first of Shvat, b'sil says the 15th of Shvat. We know we go with the 15th of Shvat. Let's leave that aside. The Gemara is bothered by something else. Ve'echad b'shvat Rosh Hashanah le'ilan. So if I were to ask you, so you would normally think, what does Tu B'Shvat usher in? In Eretz Yisrael, what does it usher in? Or what should it usher in? Spring. Does it usher in spring? No. In fact, I think that there was a delayed opening for schools in Yerushalayim today because of the possibility of snow. Right? So meaning it's interesting. It's not spring. It's not spring. Some years it happens to be that Tu B'Shvat represents, but Baruch Hashem, it's still the rainy season in Eretz Yisrael, right? Remember, if the rain stops by Tu B'Shvat, that's actually not good agriculturally or not good in any way. So the Gemara is intrigued by this idea that Tu B'Shvat is the beginning, is somehow a significant day, being that it is still in the midst of winter. So the Gemara is, look at number five, Be'echa B'Shar Shalani, then my time up. Why is it that Tu B'Shvat is the beginning of this new tithing cohort? Am Rabbi Lazar Moshia, Afa Pi, Sherov Tekufa Mibachutz, Hoil V'Yatzu Rov Gishmei Shana. So the Gemara says something very interesting. That by the time, ultimately again, that Tu B'Shvat comes around, the majority of the rainfall has already fallen. So the Gemara already acknowledges the fact that we know seasonally, winter is not over. Winter is not, I don't mean here, I mean Eretz Yisrael. Winter is not over. And there's still going to be more rain, and there's still going to be more winter-like weather. So what does Tu B'Shvat represent? Tu B'Shvat tells us that more than 51% of the winter is behind us. More than 51% of the rain has already fallen. Has already fallen. Okay. So what do you, yes? I would assume not, because this is the Mechaber. This is Rav Yosef Karo also, so I would assume that Sfaradim don't have something different. See, he says, Noah Gimashas la harbis azamine peros. So I don't know, maybe Sfaradim don't eat fruit. Maybe it was just the Minhag Ashkenazim to eat fruit. Here, the Mishnah Berurah is just commenting on our fruit consumption. But on the Tachnun piece, no one seems to be arguing. Yeah, I don't know what Sfaradim do vis-a-vis fruit consumption on Tu B'Shvat. That I don't know. Any of the Sephardic young women? I'm sorry? Shivanam, you do eat it.
Yeah, but it's not such a big deal.
We're
just like bring out the
pomegranate. Got it. More ceremonial. Good. We Ashkenazim do the same thing. It's all right. Okay, so understand. So over here, the Gemara is telling me that halacha l'maisa, what's unique about this date, so interestingly enough, what's unique about this date, Tu B'Shvat, is we often think it's the beginning of spring. It's not the beginning of spring. There's still more winter to come, and potentially even more winter, much more winter to come. So what's significant about this day? Look at the Gemara. Amar Rabbi Elazar Amar Yoshia, Afa pi sherov tekufa mibachutz. Even though, again, there is still more winter to come. That's what that phrase means. There's still more winter to come. Hoil v'yatzu rov gishmei shana. By the time Tu B'Shvat rolls around, there is the majority of the rains have already fallen. So the significance of this date, the majority of the rains have already fallen. You'll say, so what's significant about that? Take a look at Rashi. It's actually quite amazing. Rashi says, Hoil v'yatzu rov gishmei shana, shekvar avar rov yimos hagishamim. So remember again, the majority of the rains have already fallen. Now, the truth is, it's saying the same thing. Even though there's more winter ahead, the majority of the winter is behind us. The majority of the winter is behind us. Va'Allah hasraf be'ilanos. What does that phrase mean? Va'Allah hasraf be'ilanos? I'm sorry?
Doesn't it mean frost?
Frost, no. I'm sorry?
Srefa?
I'm sorry? Sap. Sraf means sap. Excellent. Va'ala hasraf be'ilanos means the sap is surging through the trees. V'nimtza haperos chontin me'ata. And the fruits begin to bud. Chontin chanota means to bud. Different fruits mature in different ways, but some fruits begin as a small bud. Right? So the fruits begin to bud. So according to Rashi, what's significant about Tu B'Shvat is as follows. The majority of the rain has already fallen. The sap is surging through the trees, and the fruits begin to bud. Okay. Very beautiful idea, an interesting horticultural idea, right? That the sap is surging through the trees. That's great. The fruits are beginning to bud. Absolutely beautiful. But of course, again, the Shiloh, the question becomes, so what is the significance for us? Now, I just want to show you something amazing. If you take a look at the Mordechai, so take a look in number 7. So the Mordechai writes over here as follows. He quotes something very interesting. Shebikshu ligzor tanis sheni v'chamishi. So remember again, there's a concept of bahab. Right, a concept of fasting Monday, Thursday, Monday in different sequences. So the Mordechai deals, we're not going to get into Bahab right now, but I just want to point out something very interesting. That if it happens to be that one is observing Bahab, Upaga betainis tu bishvat, yeshlochosh l'rosh Hashanah, velitchos hatainis. Oh, lo. So interesting, they ask the Mordechai the question. What happens if someone is going ahead and fasting on Bahab, and it happens to be in the middle of Bahab, what falls out? Tu B'Shvat, like it does this year, right? Tu B'Shvat is a Monday, it's today. So what happens if I'm in the middle of Bahab and Tu B'Shvat falls out in the middle of my Bahab sequence? So should I go ahead and delay my Bahab fast or not? Or should I just continue my sequence of fasting? So the Mordechai writes, Daiti Nota, second line number 7, Shatainis Nidcha Ad HaShabbos HaAcher Ve'im Kovin Tainis Bo Bayom Shalomatsana The Mordechai says something amazing over here. He says, so if Bahab falls out on Tu B'Shvat, we're going to push the fast to the next week. Why? What does the Mordechai say? Why do we do that? Shalomatzanu tainis b'Rosh Hashanah. What does it mean? Shalomatzanu tainis b'Rosh Hashanah? We don't fast Rosh Hashanah. By the way, which Rosh Hashanah is he talking about? Which Rosh Hashanah? Tishrei. Right? Utnan, Dolid Rosh, remember again, this is interesting halacha, a machlokis in halacha, are you permitted to fast on Rosh Hashanah? So there are actually many opinions that held throughout the ages that yes, not only can you fast, but perhaps it's a great idea to fast on Rosh Hashanah. Shulchan Aruch Paskins, we don't fast on Rosh Hashanah. For us, Rosh Hashanah is a Yom Tov, there's a day of Simcha, a day of Riboy Seudos, and ultimately, again, we do not fast on Rosh Hashanah. So the Mordechai says something amazing. He says the same way that we don't fast on Rosh Hashanah, the first of Tishrei, we also don't fast on Tu B'Shvat. Now, what's the net connection between Rosh Hashanah, the first of Tishrei, and Tu B'Shvat? What's the connection? The Mishnah back in number 3. Remember again that first Mishnah, Maseches Rosh Hashanah, Arba Rosh Hashanim Heim. There are 4 new years. Just like there's the new year on the first of Tishrei, which is the calendrical new year, but also the new year for judgment. So too, again, there's Tu B'Shvat, which is the Rosh Hashanah Li'ilanos. So the Mordechai, therefore, says the same way that we don't fast on Rosh Hashanah of Tishrei, we also won't fast on Rosh Hashanah of Tu B'Shvat. An incredible halacha. And in fact, if you look at number 8, so the Shulchan Aruch writes, Tzibur shebikshu ligzor tainis sheni v'chamishi v'sheni. If the Tzibur is fasting a Bahab fast of Monday, Thursday, Monday, upaga betainis Tu B'Shvat, and Tu B'Shvat happens to fall out on either a Monday or a Thursday during that Bahab sequence, hatainis nidcha l'Shabbos haba. We push the fast day to the following week. So ultimately, again, an incredible halacha. So, and again, the Shulchan Aruch number 8 is based on the Mordechai in number 7, which is the Mordechai telling us we don't fast on Rosh Hashanah. And the same way that we do not go ahead and fast on the Rosh Hashanah of calendrical years, Rosh Hashanah, L'shanim, L'shmitin, U'liyovlos, the first of Tishrei, we also don't fast on the Rosh Hashanah, L'ilanos, the Rosh Hashanah of Tu Bishvat. So there is an incredible, I did not put it on the sheet, I apologize. We're actually going to do this for Moshe Mirtz Hashem on Wednesday. We're going to spend 2 days on Tu Bishvat, if it's okay. But I did not put it on the sheet, and I apologize. There is a beautiful insight in the Sefer Zecher David. The Sefer Zecher David was written by Rav David of Modena. He was a Spanish Talmud Chacham, a Spanish scholar, in the 17th century. The Zecher David, which is a very, it's actually fascinating. It's a six-volume set. It's like an encyclopedia on Judaism. So what the Zecher David does is he goes through the different aspects of Judaism, one of the great Sephardic scholars, but he gives not just halachic insights, but Kabbalistic insights. And he's very intrigued by this connection of the Mordechai. The fact that the Mordechai goes ahead and links Tu Bishvat with Rosh Hashanah, ultimately, again, of what we call Rosh Hashanah, the first of Tishrei. Because I want to point something out. For example, can you go ahead and fast on the other Rosh Hashanah? For example, go back to number three for just a moment. On the first of Elul, the Mishnah says, is Rosh Hashanah for Maaser Behema, for animal tithing. Now remember again, what does that mean if it's Rosh Hashanah for animal tithing? What do you think that means? Cohorts, it's the same idea, right? The same idea is you tithe, you only tithe from that particular year, from that cohort of animals. Remember, every tithing group needs to be made into a cohort. Cohort means a group, right? To be a group, you have to have a beginning date and an end date. So the first of Elul is to Rosh Hashanah, ultimately give my son. Can I ask you, can you fast on the first of Elul? Can you fast? Yeah. So you see something very interesting. You see, if you read the Mordechai quickly, you might think that the Mordechai is saying that the Mishnah tells you that there are four Rosh Hashanah, right? Four New Years, and really not allowed to fast on any of them. But the truth is, that's actually not true. You can fast, if you want, on the first of Elul. Remember again, what was another one? There was another Rosh Hashanah on the first of Nisan. The first of Nisan is the Rosh Hashanah for Melachim and Regalim. So let's say, keep it simple, for Melachim, for kings, which means kings, Jewish kings, count their reign, right? The year one of their reign is the first of Nisan. Are you allowed to fast on the first of Nisan? Yes. So it turns out, interestingly enough, that there are really only two Rosh Hashanah that, yes, on Rosh Chodesh. Is that what you're asking? Oh, so excellent. So the truth is, excellent. You're not supposed to fast on Nisan. But for example, I'll tell you what you could do. Let's say a person has a bad dream. So a tainis chalom. So tainis chalom you can do even during Nisan. So there are certain exceptions to the rule. Generally, we would not declare like a bahab like fast in Chodesh Nisan. That is correct. But technically speaking, you could fast on the day if there was an acute need. That's different than Rosh Hashanah. For example, the Mishnah Berurah actually discusses, could one have a tainis chalom on Rosh Hashanah, the first of what we call Rosh Hashanah, the first of Tishrei. And the Mishnah Berurah says, ideally, one should not. So you see that although at first glance you would think that the Mordechai is saying you can't fast on any of the four Rosh Hashanah, in fact, that's not true. The Zecher David points out, there's really only two New Years you can't fast on. And they are, number one, right? Tishrei, right? Rosh Chodesh Tishrei, what we call Rosh Hashanah. And number two, Tu Bishvat. So the Zecher David says something that I think is so incredibly beautiful. He says, you clearly see from this Mordechai that there is a connection between Rosh Hashanah, the first of Tishrei, and ultimately, again, Tu Bishvat. What's the connection? So remember again, what is Rosh Hashanah, the first of Tishrei? What does it represent for us? Excuse me? Renewal. A brand new beginning. Right? Remember again, the first of Tishrei is not only a brand new calendrical year, but remember again the Simcha of Yom Noraim, right? Yom Noraim have this strange dynamic. On one hand, there is an Ema and there is a Yira, right? There is a certain level of fear and trepidation because there is a recognition that there is judgment, right? It's not HaMelech HaKadosh, it's HaMelech HaMishpat, right? Ultimately, Zachrinu L'chayim Melech HaFeiz B'chayim. I understand everything that is being decided. But there's an incredible joy in the Yamim Noraim as well, because there's an element of renewal. There's an opportunity to begin again. There's an opportunity to start over. So says the Zecher David, and he makes such an amazing observation. Go back up for just a moment to number three. See, points out over here, if you look at the way the Mishnah reads, for example, look at the second line, Be'echad B'tishrei, Rosh Hashanah L'shanim, L'shmitim liovlos l'netia uliyirakos. Right, so if you notice, so right, then be'echar b'shvat, Rosh Hashanah le'ilon. Let me ask you, if you were writing that phrase in the Mishnah, you would write, be'echar b'shvat, Rosh Hashanah le'ilonos. Right? Again, shmitin yovlos, netia yirakos, you would think you would put ilonos. So absolutely, Zeichet David makes an amazing observation. He says, Rosh Hashanah le'ilon is not just a new year for the trees, but it's a Rosh Hashanah, it's a new beginning for the tree. What does the tree refer to? So remember the pasuk in Chumash that says, Ki ha'adam eitz hasadeh. Remember again, what's the context of that pasuk? Ki ha'adam eitz hasadeh? Close, not too far off from Egla Rufa. Excellent. Remember again, just a couple of psukim off. Right? Right? Torah says when you go out to war, remember the Jewish army goes out to win. Right? The Jewish army goes out to inflict, to whatever, do whatever they do in order to win. So the Torah says, but however, if you're going out to war against an enemy, don't unnecessarily cut down fruit trees. Why? Now the pasuk says, Ki ha'adam eitz hasadeh. Now the way Rashi reads that pasuk is, it's to be read as a question. Ki ha'adam eitz hasadeh, is the tree your enemy? Is the tree a combatant? Is the tree an enemy soldier that you have to go out and destroy it? But the Zecher David understands this to be a declarative statement. Ki ha'adam eitz hasadeh. Man is so much like the fruit, the tree of the field. And the truth is, the metaphor of man as a tree is so multi-layered. Right? What's the comparison between a person and a tree? A lot. Good. Excellent. Good. What are the comparisons?
We grow.
Excellent. What else? Right? Remember, before we get to the fruits, what does every tree need? Roots. Right? A tree needs roots. Right? By definition, a tree without roots. Hadam eitz hasadeh. A person has to have roots. Right? What are your roots? Your roots are your parents, your grandparents, the roots of the Mesorah, right? The roots of the Shalshalas HaMesorah, all the way back to Moshe Rabbeinu, all the way back to Torah Misinai. But at the end of the day, if all a tree has is roots, then the tree is not worth that much. What does the tree also have to produce? Peros, fruit. Ki ha'adam eitz hasadeh. I have roots, and I have fruits, right? I trace my way back ultimately again to Harsi and to Moshe Rabbeinu, but then my job is to take my roots and to produce something beautiful in this world, to do something significant, to create peros. Ki ha'adam eitz hasadeh. So says the Zecher David something amazing. So now Tu B'Shvat is not simply the Rosh Hashanah le'ilanos, but it is the Rosh Hashanah le'ilan. It's the Rosh Hashanah, it's the new beginning for the tree. Who is the tree? Who is the tree? The tree is us. So remember again, what did Rashi say? Is Tu B'Shvat, is it the end of winter and Tu B'Shvat comes?
No.
There's still more rainy season. So what's the significance of Tu B'Shvat? Right? The majority of rainfall has already fallen. Says Rashi, what's happening inside of the tree? Come Tu B'Shvat. What's happening? The sap. Now, what is the sap inside of the tree? The sap represents the very nectar of vitality, right? The sap is the energy inside of the tree that will allow the tree ultimately to produce peros. Remember again, when you look out in the field and you see the trees on Tu B'Shvat, what do they look like? Dead. But what's amazing is if you were to cut open that tree and look inside, what would you see happening inside of that tree? Life is beginning to bubble up, right? The sap is beginning to spread throughout the trunk, is beginning to spread throughout the branches, and the very nectar of life is beginning to surge through the tree. So isn't it an incredible dichotomy? The tree on the outside looks fundamentally dead. The tree on the outside is barren and bereft. Yet inside of the tree, the very source of vitality, the very source of life is beginning to course through every part of that tree. Says Rashi, that's the significance of Tu B'Shvat. Outside, Tu B'Shvat looks no different than Yud B'Shvat, Yad B'Shvat, Yud Dalet Shvat, Taz B'Shvat, the sixth B'Shvat, no different. But inside on Tu B'Shvat, something dramatic is happening. Writes the Zecher David something so beautiful. That man could very often learn a lot from nature. That just like on Tu B'Shvat, the tree looks dead on the outside. But on the inside, as we said, that very nectar of vitality is beginning to course through the tree. And the tree is going to produce life. So a lot of times in life, says Zecher David, we're like that tree. On the outside, I'm not looking so good. On the outside, I don't appear to be that vibrant. On the outside, I don't appear to be producing all that much. On the outside, I don't really seem to possess vitality. But inside of me, there is such an incredible koach. Inside of me, there is such incredible potential. Inside of me, there is that nectar of spirituality that is just looking to course through my veins, to course through my body, and to go out and produce such incredible peros. Or in other words, says the Zecher David, that on Tu Bishvat is the day when we celebrate the capacity of nature to renew. The capacity of nature to renew. Nature that looks barren, nature that looks more dead than alive, but yet I know that nature is going to come back. I know that nature is going to rejuvenate. I know that nature is going to experience a renaissance. It is going to come back and once again produce fruit. I look at nature and I say to myself, what? I say to myself, what? That's me. That's me. That tree, that's me. Because a lot of times I go through the winter of life as well. And in those moments when I go through the winter of life, I feel lifeless. And I feel barren. And I feel unaccomplished. And I feel like I'm not really spending my time, my resources, or maximizing my life in any way. And my branches are empty. And I'm not producing any peros. And sometimes I even give up on myself. And comes along Tu Bishvat, and it's the Rosh Hashanah Le'ilan. I remind myself that just as nature looks empty, bereft, and barren now, but there's sap coursing through those trees that is going to bring forth fruit, I am that tree. Even if I look bereft and barren externally, there is the sap of Ruchnius, the sap of Kedusha, the sap of holiness that is inside of me beginning to course through my veins. And the same way that nature will experience a renewal and a rebirth, I have the ability to experience that renewal and rebirth as well. As nature shakes off the cold and begins to renew, I can also shake off the cold and begin to renew. Says the Zecher David, that is the power of Tu Bishvat. Tu Bishvat is our mid-year Rosh Hashanah. Tu Bishvat is our mid-year restart. Our mid-year new year, our mid-year new beginning, our mid-year new page, our mid-year new chapter, for some of us, a mid-year new book, whatever you want, it's the mid-year new beginning. As nature begins to renew, I am reminded that I have the ability to renew. As nature still looks dead on the outside, but the sap of vitality is coursing through nature now, if I begin to go ahead and put my mind to it, I could feel that sap of vitality flowing through me, ready to produce peros as well. And now we understand. Now we go back. Why does the Shulchan Aruch say? So now, why does the Shulchan Aruch say that we don't say Tachanun today? Why no Tachanun today? Because why? Because it's a Yom Tov. Because it's an element of Simcha. And why is it a Yom Tov? And it has nothing to do with Boxer. Right, that is, we're not even sure what exactly to do with Boxer. Right, it's nothing to do with the Boxer, nothing to do with the dried fruit. All of that is a remes. Why is there a Yom Tov? Why is there an element of Simcha today? Because I am reminded that just as nature is destined to renew, I have the ability to do so as well. That if I want to use today, the Rosh Hashanah Le'ilan, as my springboard for revitalization, for rebirth, for regrowth, for a new beginning, just as the sap flows through the trees, the sap of vitality flows through me as well. And the knowledge that I could experience a renaissance and a rebirth, the knowledge that I could start over, the knowledge that I could turn a new page, ein simcha gedola mizo. There is no greater happiness, there is no greater joy than the joy of a new beginning. And therefore says the Shulchan Aruch, nagu shalalipa pnei. I'll tell you something interesting. So if it's such a big simcha, what does nagu mean? It's a minog. See what exactly, what would the Shulchan Aruch say? It's a halacha. But it doesn't say, it says it's a minog. So why do you think it's only a minog and not a halacha? What do you think?
Maybe because it's a there's no halachos to tell you to look inside yourself and to.
Excellent.
It has to be your own way of being life.
Excellent. Because at the end of the day, new beginnings are a great gift, but you have to choose to take it. You have to choose to take it. So the halach is not going to tell you. You can't say tachnun.
We know every young people do things like that, but it's fine.
Yeah, but here, but never do we see in the natural world this dynamic. The truth is, the secret is, every day you could have this. It's not just Tu B'Shat, it's not just Rosh Hashanah every day. But sometimes we need dramatic reminders.
We have halachos on Rosh Hashanah and Pesach and every young thing about how to make our inner self.
Correct, because there are certain times where you have to experience the restart. Tu B'Shvat seems to be the opportunity is here. If you want to take it, great. If you don't want to take it, that's between you and yourself. So the halacha doesn't say, we don't say tachnun. We don't say tachnun. It says nagu. Nagu means it is up to you to decide what you want to make of this day Tu B'Shvat. If you want to tap into the renewal of nature and use it as an opportunity to renew yourself, then the gift of a new beginning is here. But if Chas HaShalom, I choose to just make this a day like any other, Shulchan Aruch says, okay, we can't force you, as we just said, can't force you to introspect, can't force you to find your sap, can't force you to renew, can't force you to start again. If we want the opportunity, it's here. As nature renews, we are given the great gift of renewal as well. But no one could force you to take advantage of your opportunities. All HaKadosh Baruch Hu could do is place the opportunities before us, but it is up to us to decide if we want them. So we begin to see that not only is Tu B'Shvat a significant day, first of all, halachically, establishing again the cohort for Maiser Peros Eilan, for tithing ultimately again of fruits of the tree, so it is halachically significant, but it is also dramatically, hashkafically, and spiritually significant as well. That on the day that the majority of the rain is over, the sap begins to course through the trees, and the barren trees will once again produce life, even if we have become barren trees. As a result of a variety of different reasons, the sap of Kiddusha courses through us as well. And if we choose to tap into the new beginning of Tu B'Shvat, that sap has the ability to produce incredible results, incredible peros as well. So we'll stop over here for today. We're going to spend one more class on Tu B'Shvat, focusing on a beautiful idea of Rav Moshe, Samir Samal on Wednesday.